From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Looks like Musk
Love. Well, everything looks like Musk Love these days, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Especially this, from of all places, the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. A lawyer at advertising conglomerate Interpublic Group got a phone call in December from a lawyer at X, formerly Twitter. The message was clear, according to several people with knowledge of the conversation. Get your clients to spend more in ads on Elon Musk's social media platform, or else. Ex-CEO Linda Yaccarino, Lady Yak to me, has made comments that seemed like similar warnings in conversations with Interpublic executives, according to people with knowledge of those talks. Interpublic leaders interpreted the communications from X as reminders that the recently announced a $13 billion deal to merge Interpublic with rival ad conglomerate Omnicom Group could be torpedoed or at least slowed down by the Trump administration, given Musk's powerful role in the federal government, whatever it is. President Trump said this week Elon Musk wasn't head of Doge. Something like that. They also had a front row seat to Musk's continued criticism of advertisers. Those advertisers ditched X since he bought it in 2022. Interpublic has recently signed a new annual deal with X for potential client spending. People familiar with the agreement said, quote, we now see brands returning in quite significant numbers because the easiest route is just spend a minimum viable amount on the platform. Not because they want to advertise there and run their ads adjacent to the content on X, but because they're afraid of legal and political ramifications of not doing so. Unquote. But ladies and gentlemen, I have a theory. I don't know if I've shared it with you before, but it's based on a story I think I've shared with you. If not, I've been a bad boy. In the 1990s, the New York Post ran a front page headline, Best Sex Ever, Says Marla, referring to Trump's then girlfriend, Marla Maples. He was still married to Ivanka, but, you know, he was fooling around. The story was supposedly planted, according to stories at the time, by Trump's publicist, but it later turned out that was not true. It was planted by Trump on the phone to the New York Post, pretending to be his publicist, using the fake name John Barron. And yes, the postscript to that story is that Trump named his most recent son, the one he had with Melania, Barron. He named his son after his fake PR man persona. And my theory is, you know that story and you know everything you need to know about Donald Trump. It's all embodied there. The rest is commentary. And so it is, ladies and gentlemen, with the aforementioned Elon Musk. This story that I'm about to share with you tells you everything you need to know. Everything else is commentary. Just a reminder, as I told you last week, Elon Musk is 53. He has admitted, according to The Guardian, that he cheated at video games to get high scores. It's according to a transcript of a private online conversation that he had. That concludes, apparently, a fiery scandal over his outlandish claims to be a globally ranked player. Musk has regularly bragged about his gaming rankings. He told Joe Rogan last year he was in the top 20 players in the world for the fiendishly difficult action role-playing game Diablo 4. His claims have raised questions about how the world's richest man could find time to compete video game-wise internationally. He would need to have played hundreds of hours in between running businesses, including Tesla, X, SpaceX, and X whatever else, as well as his growing political activity alongside Donald Trump. Two games Musk says he has high scores in, Diablo 4 and Path of Exile 2, are notoriously hard to compete in. This is according to The Guardian. Some players spend most of their waking hours grinding through dungeons and battling monsters and other fantastical creatures to make their virtual characters more powerful. Just a reminder, he's 53. An answer to Musk's unlikely gaming prowess was provided in a video posted on YouTube last week by the top elite Diablo player Nico Rex, Rex with a W, which showed what he said was a direct message conversation with Musk, in which Musk admits to account boosting, a cheating practice in which people get other players to power up their characters, usually done by paying them to play for hours. Well, how can he afford? Oh, quote, have you level boosted and or purchased gear resources for Path of Exile 2 and Diablo 4, asked Nico Rex. Musk responded with a 100% emoji. He later added, quote, it's impossible to beat the players in Asia if you don't, as they do, unquote. Guardian couldn't independently verify the transcript. Musk did repost the video to his X account. Uproar about Musk's alleged video game prowess exploded, according to The Guardian, after his comments on Joe Rogan's podcast last November. Further scrutiny came at the beginning of this year. He did a live stream of his Path of Exile 2 character on X. High-level players with deep knowledge of the game said Musk made rookie mistakes that no expert would make, including walking straight past valuable items that would help his character. After being called out, Musk began to fight the allegations publicly, getting into arguments with prominent gamers. He's 53. At the end of the conversation with Nico Rex, Musk claimed to be, quote, a living god of video games, unquote. The Canadian musician Grimes, who has three children with Musk from a relationship now part of the past, tweeted in his defense this week saying she had seen with her own eyes how he was a top Diablo player in the U.S. There are other witnesses who can verify this, she said. But on Monday, further allegations of cheating were leveled when Musk's Path of Exile 2 character was seen as active in the game while Musk was in Washington attending Trump's inauguration. The Washington Post piles on the scandal at issue here, has, quote, nevertheless baffled a community of gamers that once deified him as a celebrity geek, and has raised questions among former fans about his need for online praise and domination. Why would a famous billionaire at the peak of his real-world power care so much about beating nobodies in a fantasy video game? He's 53. Quote, Elon lost the trust of all gamers overnight, said Dan Nelson, a programmer in Philadelphia. Quoting again, boosting your account and lying about it is the worst offense. Incredibly cringe, fragile ego on full display, unquote. Musk did not respond to requests for comment. But gamers who watched some of the play that occurred under Musk's name and noted the obvious, what they called rookie mistakes, well, that all soured Musk in the eyes of some hardcore gamers for whom grinding out challenges, farming loot, and no-lifing games are seen as virtues of endurance and self-sacrifice. By paying someone else to earn him his high-level gear, they said, he'd removed most of the challenge, only to boast how quickly he'd beaten others who played fair and square. One poster on a Diablo subreddit called it, quote, unbelievably pathetic that the world's richest man would feel the need to cheat in a video game to, quote, claim he is good at something most people couldn't care less about, unquote. And yes, my theory is that explains everything else he's done and does. Hello, welcome to the show. Did I mention he's 53? From New Orleans, Louisiana, where Mardi Gras is going on right now, except I think it's being rained out today. But it's going on. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better.
Hooray, I knew you were going to say that. Ralph, reading an AI jingle written by Claude, one of the ChatGPT rivals. Good work, Claude. Humane's AI pin is about to become an expensive brick. But the startup, that's the startup is Humane. The startup set to discontinue service less than a year after the wearable AI gadget began shipping. They can no longer deny their golden carriage is actually a rotting pumpkin, according to Mashable.com. In a post to Humane's support website, the company announced that all of its AI pins will stop working in just 10 days. Sounds like the federal government. All AI pins will stop connecting to Humane servers February 28th. Why? That's less than a week. Is it? Yeah. And all consumer data will be permanently deleted as well, with users instructed to download anything they don't want to lose before then. And Humane has also ceased selling the gadget, like now. Quote, we're writing to inform you that effective immediately, we're winding down the consumer AI pin as our business priorities have shifted, said Humane's post. Where have we heard those words before? Oh, everywhere. Quote, your engagement has meant the world to us, and we deeply appreciate the role you've played in our innovation journey, unquote. Okay? Journey, ladies and gentlemen. When you hear that word, run. Technically, the AI pin won't be completely useless. Humane notes it will still offer offline features, such as battery level. There's a little point, of course, in checking how much battery is left on a gadget that only tells you how much battery it has left. Any of the AI pin's functions which require cloud connectivity will no longer work, including voice commands. Pin, stop listening to me. AI responses, it's basically anything you'd actually want to use the wearable for. Quote, we recognize this may be an unexpected change, and we are here to support you, wrote Humane. The help is temporary, though. Customer support will also be discontinued on February 28th. Well, at least they can do two things at the same time. Come on, give them credit for that. Oh, and speaking of AI, as I just was, older chatbots, just like people, show signs of cognitive impairment, failing on several important metrics in a test normally used on human patients. This is from LiveScience.com. People increasingly rely on artificial intelligence for medical diagnoses because of how quickly and efficiently these tools can spot anomalies and warning signs in medical histories, x-rays, and other data sets before they become obvious to the naked human eye. But a new study published late last year in the British Medical Journal raises concerns that AI technologies like large language models, like you, Claude, like GPT, like people, show signs of deteriorated cognitive abilities with age. Doesn't say here whether it starts at 53. These findings challenge the assumption that artificial intelligence will soon replace human doctors, the study's authors wrote in the paper, as the cognitive impairment evident in leading chatbots may affect their reliability in medical diagnostics and undermine patients' confidence, unquote. Scientists tested publicly available LLM, large language model-driven chatbots, including ChatGPT, Anthropic's Sonnet, and Alphabet's Gemini, using a series of tasks neurologists use to test abilities in attention, memory, language, spatial skills, and executive mental function. The test, the MOCA, is most commonly used to assess or test for the onset of cognitive impairment in conditions like Alzheimer's or dementia. I bet Donald Trump could ace this test. Subjects are given tests like drawing a specific time on a clock, starting at 100 and repeatedly subtracting 7. Remembering as many words as possible from a spoken list, camera, and so on. In humans, 26 out of 30 is considered a passing score. While some aspects of testing, like naming, attention, language, and abstraction, were seemingly easy for most of the large language models used, they all performed poorly in visual spatial skills and executive tasks, with several doing worse than others in areas like delayed recall. I said delayed recall. So I don't have him be your executive, I guess. Don't put him in the corner office. Crucially, while the most recent version of ChatGPT scored the highest, 26 out of 30, the older Gemini 1.0 only scored 16, leading to the conclusion older LLMs, large language models, show signs of cognitive decline. Study's authors note their findings are observational only. Critical differences between ways in which AI and the human mind work means the experiment can't constitute a direct comparison, but they caution it might point to what they call a significant area of weakness that could put the brakes on the deployment of AI in clinical medicine. Specifically, they argued against using AI in tasks requiring visual abstractions and executive function. Like, you're fired. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the legacy media, as they're called, have a lot of flaws, have a lot of benefits too, not duplicated in online chats as of yet, like reporting. But as I say, one of the flaws is they'll stick on a story, they'll flood the zone, as we're now taught to say, for a little while, and then move on. And when they move on, there's nothing in the follow-up department. I can tell you this from personal experience regarding the story of the flooding of New Orleans. None of the legacy media were here when the two reports attributing that flood to human errors came out. They were gone by then. Similarly, the legacy media have moved on past the California fires, but this from a local paper, the Santa Monica Daily Press. Over the past few days, it's been impossible to avoid seeing the telltale signs of wildfire ash and debris accumulating along the coastline. At low tide in particular, endless thick lines of ash particles are easily visible against the golden sands. As sea level dropped to its lowest point at low tide this past week across the intertidal zone, vast swathes of black and burnt debris could be seen stretching to the horizon in every direction. And despite being right next to the Pacific Ocean, the unique smell of soot and ash was overpowering. The January wildfires generated 4.5 million tons of waste, or nearly half of L.A. County's typical annual waste total. Many items typically found in homes contain chemicals and materials that will produce toxic fumes and residuals when burnt. Televisions, laptops, solar panels, and in fact just about anything electronic, batteries, cars, and electric vehicles, all contain certain components that are made from materials that present a contamination danger after being incinerated. And then there's the asbestos, which still exists in many houses built between 1930 and 1950. As of this week, the beach report card from an organization that does those, called Heal the Bay, has general advisory cautions on just about every beach between Marina del Rey and Malibu. Several sections of Santa Monica Beach currently have an F rating. Just to explain, if you've been out of school for a while, that's not good. Quote, I'm here tonight to bring urgent attention to the alarming amount of soot and ash that is accumulating on our beaches following the Palisades fire. Every day that passes without immediate action, we lose the opportunity to properly remove and remediate these contaminants before they become a long-term environmental hazard. That's from a local official. Officials stress that until more is known, it would be prudent for beachgoers to not let their children play in the debris, to wear shoes at all times on the beach, and to stay out of the water. For the time being, you might want to consider taking a mask with you should you wish to stroll along the shoreline. Good reason to visit, isn't it? Now some more thoughts about advertising. One has to give Elon Musk, the aforementioned Elon Musk, he's 53, credit for one thing. When he brought out his new car, the Tesla, he decided not to advertise it. And never did. Never has. It is sold basically through two things. Word of mouth from people who own one. That's how I bought one. A couple people already owned them and said, yeah, great car. Or publicity because he acts the fool in public. He gets a lot of news. Now there's a new trend going on in the advertising world. According to Variety, the show business newspaper, never have so many media entities decided to smash long-standing policies about where commercials might run. Both CNN and ABC last year opted to sell ads during their telecasts of the 2024 presidential debates. For years, those have aired commercial-free as a public service. Public what? Netflix, which for years vowed never to run ads in its streaming hits. In 2022, it did an about-face. It now allows marketers to live sports telecasts to advertise and live sports telecasts, as well as scripted favorites on its reduced price subscription tier. I should have one of those, shouldn't I? Or just a tier. Amazon Prime Video has become extremely aggressive in its bid to vacuum up TV ad dollars. Has done the same. HBO programs long associated with running commercial-free can now be broken up with ads on Max, the streaming outlet backed by its corporate parent. Paramount Global struck deals last year that let Ram Trucks and Duluth Trading Company, among others, create Yellowstone-themed commercials that popped up in the ad breaks inside the show Yellowstone. Why, it's almost as if the show never ended and it just became a commercial. Even Saturday Night Live, what? Famously resistant to commercials using elements from its sketches, got in on the act during its 50th anniversary season. The show's producers and cast have worked with Capital One, Allstate, and Volkswagen, letting them make use of popular characters. Why are media giants letting their walls fall when in the past they wouldn't crumble? Quote, the rise of streaming has made them a lot more flexible to do any deal, says Brian Sheehan, a professor of advertising at Syracuse University. Quote, and now that streaming services are accepting ads, they're open for any business deal they can do, unquote. More commercials, ladies and gentlemen. That's what this country needs.
Take your hands off my
head.
alone.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, this is the show. Did I hear me mention a certain TV show in the last segment? I think I did. And that stimulates me to point out just a couple of things that were missing from the geyser of hagiography that emanated from New York last week in the wake of all that. First of all, the title of a book that's just come out about that show is titled Lorne, the Man Who Invented Saturday Night Live. And that brought back a certain memory. There was a show, see if this makes any sense to you. It was a show on NBC on Saturday evening, live from Studio 8H in Rockefeller Center. It was sketch comedy and musical numbers. It was 90 minutes long. And it wasn't Saturday Night Live. It was 20 years before Saturday Night Live ever aired. It was called Your Show of Shows. It starred Sid Caesar, then a top comedy performer of the time, and a wonderful second banana, Imogene Coca. Among the writers in the writer's room, Carl Reiner, Woody Allen, Neil Simon. Kind of a big show. Oh, it was on in prime time, not late night. Went on for about 4 years. So that's the same show, as far as I can tell, that the title character in that book invented. A lot of people ask, how does any show last for 50 years? That was one of the amazed comments that was going around New York last week, like the flu. There's a very simple answer, ladies and gentlemen. That show is the only entertainment program on American television that has never had competition on either of the other two major networks. You give me that, I'll give you 50 years. But by contrast, the same guy behind that show actually produced another sketch comedy show on NBC in 1984. And it did have competition on CBS and ABC. It was called The New Show, and you probably have never heard of it because it didn't live long enough to celebrate its 10th episode anniversary. And now,
it's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Well, HP, which used to be called Hewlett-Packard back when they made stuff, is trying to force consumer PC and print customers to use digital support channels by setting a minimum 15-minute wait time for anyone who phones the call center to get answers to troublesome queries. The wait time was added last Tuesday, according to internal communications seen by the British tech journal The Register. And it impacts retail patrons in the UK, Ireland, France, Germany, Italy. More countries are going to be added. Why wouldn't they? Quote, we want to inform you of a change in the NLIVR, natural language IVR, and languages for consumer, print, and PC customers, effective today, HP says in a memo. IVR is interactive voice response. The notice continues, quote, objective is to influence customers to increase their adoption of digital self-solve. Don't be doing that at home. As a faster way to address their support question, this involves inserting a message of high call volumes to expect a delay in connecting to an agent and offering digital self-solve solutions as an alternative. End of quote. End of self-solve. At the beginning of a call to telephone support, a message will be played stating, "We're experiencing longer waiting times and we apologize for the inconvenience. The next available representative will be with you in about 15 minutes. To quickly resolve your issue, please visit our website, supporthp.com, to check out other support options or find helpful articles and assistant to get a guided help by visiting virtualagent.hpcloud.hp.com. Got that? End of quote. Those who want to continue to hold are told to, quote, "Please stay on the line," unquote. On the 5th, 10th, and 13th minute of the waiting time, the recorded message will tell HP customers it is, quote, "experiencing longer waiting times and we apologize for the inconvenience," unquote, and again remind them they may switch to alternatives, like self-solve. To reaffirm the changes, HP says in the staff memo, quote, "The wait time for each customer is set to 15 minutes. Notice the expected wait time is mentioned only in the beginning of the call. The message will be read out 3 times during the wait time after the initial reading." What's the reason for the change? Quote, "Encouraging more digital adoption by nudging customers to go online to self-solve and taking decisive short-term action to generate warranty cost efficiencies," unquote. The email says customer experience metrics are being tracked weekly, as are the number of phone calls that subsequently give up and move to social or live chat. 15 minutes might not seem like an eternity, but an insider in HP's European operations told the British tech journal The Register, many within HP are pretty unhappy about the measures being taken and the fact that those making decisions don't have to deal with the customers who their decisions impact, unquote. I think they meant whom. It's a smart, 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 smart world. And ladies and gentlemen, our related subject. Uh-oh. Yes, it sounds like a crypto winner. Brr. Bybit, the market's third largest crypto exchange, has just been hacked for nearly $1.5 billion in Ethereum. This happened just on Friday. On-chain activity shows the hacker has been selling the stolen funds an hour after he or she hit. Quote, "Please rest assured that all other cold wallets are secure. All withdrawals are normal," said the CEO of Bybit. The hacker gained access to Ether in the exchange's cold wallet, a secure offline storage device for holding cryptocurrencies, and sent funds to an unidentified address. Quote, "Bybit's Ethereum, multi-sig cold wallet was compromised through a deceptive transaction that tricked signers into unknowingly approving a malicious smart contract logic change," said the co-founder and CTO of Cyverse. That's a smart contract whose logic can change like that. In a later statement, the head of the company said, "Bybit is solvent. Even if this hack loss is not recovered, all of client assets are one-to-one backed. We can cover the loss." That's $1.5 billion. That's not crypto dollars. That's real dollars. Prior to this Bybit hack, the largest hack in the crypto industry was the Ronin Network exploit, March 2022. That was a $600 million loss. That's pennies, but they don't make them anymore. So Bybit did not immediately respond to additional requests for comment. The lead security researcher at the crypto wallet MetaMask warned that the threat that felled Bybit was the same as that of many other high-profile attacks. Quote, no one is prepared for the attack, Vector. This will happen again and again and again, unquote. That consultant pointed to attacks on India-based crypto exchange WazirX, decentralized autonomous organization Radiant Capital, and Japan-based crypto exchange DMM Bitcoin. They followed a similar pattern. In each instance, the attackers could get around security measures to re-implement a version of each project's crypto wallet. But the wallet interface appeared the same to the original owners. Look, it's the same wallet. Why don't I... Oh. And now. News of the land of 4,000 princes, our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's crown prince wasn't in the room for the first high-level talks between Russia and the United States over Moscow's war on Ukraine, or Ukraine's war on Moscow, let's be fair. Come on now. But Mohammed bin Salman still won the day, according to the Associated Press. Oh, we don't... Yes, we do. Still won the day for hosting the gathering. It could be a game-changer in the bloody conflict. As far as I know, he did not offer to end the war with a bone saw, but he did take over Saudi Arabia as its de facto leader under his father, the 89-year-old king. And the crown prince now finds himself at the center of the Trump administration's outreach to Russia. That's a country Saudi Arabia carefully maintained ties to during the war through the OPEC Plus oil cartel. Even OPEC's got a plus. The hell is this? The prince likely caught President Trump's attention when he announced plans for a $600 billion investment in the United States, prompting the U.S. leader's musing about whether to make Saudi Arabia the location for his first foreign trip in this term. Yeah, that's considered a payback. I'm going to come visit you. And with Trump suggesting his first meeting with the Russian President Putin, something Moscow hopes can bring it in from the cold of Western nations, will take place in Saudi Arabia, Prince Mohammed is likely to remain a top player. As the summit opened, the state-run Saudi press agency announced that upon direction from the royal, talks between Russia and the U.S. are taking place in Riyadh, capital of Saudi Arabia, as part of the kingdom's ongoing efforts to promote global security and peace, firmly putting Prince Mohammed's fingerprints on the proceedings, as well as on the bone saw. If this ain't the cue for the apologies of the week, I don't know what is. And now, the apologies of the week. Like magic.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Albany, New York. On Monday, passengers on an Allegiant Airlines flight out of Albany International Airport, bound for Punta Gorda, Florida, spent more than 6 hours on the tarmac due to weather-related delays and staffing issues. An Allegiant Airlines spokesperson told local news Channel 6 in Albany that the airline did not live up to its standard, whatever that may be. Gates for the flight were moved 4 times, according to passengers, and experienced multiple delays. Passengers said they boarded the plane around 3:30 p.m., originally scheduled for boarding at 12:15 p.m. The flight pushed out from the gate at 7 p.m., then had to undergo de-icing. Passengers say they were refused water and snacks, were only provided them hours later after begging and waiting for a departure that would never come. Passengers finally deplaned at 10:15 p.m. after they were notified crew members had reached their FAA-mandated limit for flying within a 24-hour period and timed out and would have to return to the gate. Allegiant Air sent local Channel 6 in Albany a statement quote, "We strive to provide our customers with a seamless, comfortable experience when they fly with us. Yesterday, we did not live up to our own standards. For that, we apologize to our customers in Albany who were impacted by the delays. There are so many factors that go into making a flight happen. If one step in the process doesn't go according to plan, it can usually be overcome quickly and with very little noticeable impact to our customers. Unfortunately, a confluence of factors at Albany yesterday had a cascading effect on our operations that disrupted passengers' travel plans. Our customer care team is contacting those passengers. As a gesture of goodwill, we provided refunds and additional cash compensation and vouchers for future travel to passengers on flights that experienced long delays reaching the gate. We pledge allegiance. The State Bar of California is offering refunds to applicants registered to take February 2025 bar exam because of scheduling challenges, poor communications, and inconsistent messaging, according to a post on the State Bar of California's website. Struggles ahead of the February 25 and 26 launch of the new test, written by Kaplan Exam Services, quote, have caused a lot of frustration, confusion, and anxiety, according to the post, acknowledging that information from the state bar and testing company Measure Learning was not aligned. Quote, we apologize and will take action to improve our communications with test takers immediately, said the state bar's executive director. Unlike the widely used uniform bar examination and its components administered and developed by the National Conference of Bar Examiners, the new test can be taken remotely and at test centers. California tests the second highest number of bar examinees, behind only New York. The BBC has apologized, yes, this week again, and added a clarification to its Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone documentary that featured the son of a Hamas minister. Nearly 50 entertainment figures sent a letter to the corporation to urge an investigation of that doc. Quote, the BBC had not been informed of this information, unquote, by the independent producers behind the doc, the corporation added, following backlash from dozens of senior entertainment figures, most of whom you haven't heard of, except for J.K. Rowling's agent. The letter was sent to the Director General, Content Chief Charlotte Moore, and BBC News boss Deborah Turnus, urging an investigation after the documentary about children in Gaza failed to declare the lead contributor was the son of Hamas royalty. I don't think they mean royalty like, let's say, Donald Trump does. In a statement in the past little while, the BBC said that since the transmission of the doc, it had become aware of the family connections of the film's narrator, a child called Abdullah. We've promised our audience the highest standards of transparency, so it's only right that as a result of this new information, we add some more detail to the film before its retransmission. We apologize for the omission of that detail from the original film. For future, unquote, for future repeats, the film will now clarify the narrator of this film is 13-year-old Abdullah. His father has worked as a deputy agriculture minister for the Hamas-run government in Gaza. The production team had full editorial control of filming with Abdullah. The unquote, the statement has been added to the BBC's corrections and clarification page. The BBC went on to say it followed the usual compliance procedures in making the film and had not been informed of this information by the independent producers. Unquote. Not been informed of the information. And the Pokemon Company was awarded substantial damages as part of a settlement in a long-running lawsuit with the developers of Chinese copycat mobile game Pocket Monster Remake. Does Elon play that? He's 53. Pocket Monster Remake launched in 2015 and appeared fairly popular, having earned upwards of around $42 million. It says around $42 million in this story, in a single year, according to the Pokemon Company. The game featured seemingly unaltered Pikachu artwork from the Pokemon yellow box as the app icon, while other branding for the game featured what appeared to be Ash Ketchum, Pikachu, T-Pig, and Oshawott. Oshawott. Sorry, I don't play Pokemon. Again, unaltered. Gameplay of Pocket Monster Remake shows myriad other familiar characters and Pokemon in what appears to be intended as a remake of the original game. Perhaps inevitably, the Pokemon Company filed a lawsuit 4 years ago. 3 years later, last September, the Shenzhen Intermediate People's Court, I know that show, ruled in favor of the Pokemon Company, awarding around $15 million, but both companies appealed the ruling, leading to this week's settlement announcement. The Pokemon Company also published a public apology letter from Pocket Monster remake maker Guangzhou Meiji Network Technology Company Limited, which was issued along all major social media platforms. In it, the company admits ripping off Pokemon characters, promises never to do it again, and confirms it has now shut down Pocket Monster Remake entirely. And now, finally, news of the Olympic movement, produced by Jim Ebersol III. A report released Wednesday by the U.S. Travel Association, that's a nonprofit group representing travel in the U.S., warns that the air transport system is not adequately prepared for the influx of visitors expected for the 2026 FIFA World Cup and the Los Angeles 2028 Summer Olympics. Like it's going to be held there. The statement, compiled by former government officials and industry specialists, highlights key challenges such as aging infrastructure, slow visa processing, and outdated security technology as major hurdles to accommodating the anticipated crowds. Quote, "We're not ready to host the upcoming mega decade of events that will draw millions of domestic and international travelers. This poses risks to our national security and hampers economic growth," the U.S. Travel Association warned. The report projected that 40 million people could visit the United States for events like the World Cup, Olympics and Paralympics, the 2025 Ryder Cup, oh yeah, 40 million people are going to, and America's 250th birthday. I haven't bought a thing for 6 million people expected for the World Cup alone, said the president of USA Travel. He noted in 2024, TSA screened over 5 million passengers on 5 days, including the pre-Thanksgiving rush. By 2028, they anticipate such numbers in 100 days. "The message today is clear," he said at a Capitol Hill news conference. "The status quo is not an option." The Olympic Games. Maybe it's not a movement. Maybe we don't need one. Every day. Gentlemen, yesterday, Saturday, Donald Trump spoke for more than an hour, as usual, at the CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Among the jewels that spilled from his mouth at that conference, this.
"I got a call from our great governor of Texas, who said, President, you just won every single town along the Texas border to Mexico. I said, oh, is that good? He said, it hasn't happened since Reconstruction. I said, define Reconstruction for me. He said, that means essentially the Civil War. That's a long.
Yeah. Define Reconstruction for me. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations and over your audio device of choice whenever you want it, or on your fake Pokemon game when it's available again. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, and the playlist of the music heard here on, along with a lot of stuff to watch and listen to and read and ponder. Yeah, you can ponder it all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City, where it's carnival time.